For people who love big TV talent competition, starting this week, you can double your pleasure. American Idol and Dancing with the Stars are both on the air. Idol is TV's most popular program. Dancing with the Stars is the only show that could stand a chance of beating it in the ratings. But there's a problem, says critic Eric Deggans. Dancing with the Stars is having trouble delivering on the fundamental promise of its title.
Can Dancing with the Stars survive without, well, stars? We saw these danger signs 3 weeks ago when the network broke into a broadcast of The Bachelor to introduce its new contestants.
And now, live from Hollywood, ABC's Dancing with the Stars new cast reveal.
They showed off the guy who replaced Adam Carolla on Loveline.
Loveline Loverboy, Mike Catherwood.
The dude who used to star in the Karate Kid movies.
Ralph Macchio.
Sugar Ray Leonard, who retired from boxing when Seinfeld was on the air.
Also competing on this season of Dancing from the E! Reality show, Kendra Bunny Next Door.
And the show's real superstar attraction, former cheer star, Kirstie Alley.
Kirstie.
Yes?
Yes,
hi.
We've asked you to be on before. Why now?
Why? I don't know. Pass that to someone else.
Oh.
Damn!
Maybe that's why some cynics have called this season Dancing with the D-listers. Still, Dancing with the Stars has been a critic-proof success for ABC. It's a gooey collision of mid-level fame and sideways soap opera set to a dance beat. And there's a few reasons why it's been working. First, most stars who succeed can actually dance, and they have a bullseye aim at the program's core fans, middle-aged women. Marie Osmond, Dirty Dancing star Jennifer Grey, and figure skater Christy Yamaguchi fit that bill quite nicely. Next, the show has a serious connection with gossip magazines and tabloid TV shows. Past contestants like Donny Osmond and Niecy Nash often talk it up on The Insider or Entertainment Tonight.
How do I win over the judges and get them on my side?
Well, one thing that we did was I kissed a judge.
But this year's dancing cast seems a little light in the gossip department. Hugh Hefner's ex Kendra Wilkinson may spark a few rumors, but the guy from Loveline and a kiddie star from Bratz the movie? Not so much. And to see another big problem, just watch the rehearsal videos.
Bam! Now let's work on doing it correctly.
That was right?
That was.
It looked right?
Yeah.
The biggest names seem to be the worst dancers, which puts them in danger of leaving the party early. Like Kirstie Alley, who spends a lot of time falling on the ground because she's tired.
Our first dance is the cha-cha.
That's good, because I can count to three. Cha-cha-cha.
It's actually not to three, it's to four.
Last year, Dancing with the Stars offered a strong challenge to American Idol status as TV's most-watched show. But with a bunch of marginal celebrities stumbling in rehearsals, this season may be one long struggle to deliver on dancing, stars, or much of anything else.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Countless people around the world feel an intense connection to Japan through its popular culture, specifically its animation. In the U.S., fans spent about $200 million on anime last year. It can be anything from apocalyptic stories about aliens to Pokemon or to the Oscar-winning movie Spirited Away. This weekend, NPR's Neda Ulaby visited an anime convention outside Philadelphia to talk to fans about their response to the catastrophe in Japan.
This suburban convention center is crawling with kids wearing dragon wings and outrageous neon-colored schoolgirl outfits. There's girls in Victorian dresses and boys in Victorian dresses. Joy Morrison of New Jersey is a mom walking around shaking a gallon jar that says, Japan Earthquake and Tsunami Relief.
I'll take your cash, I'll take your credit card. Your food stamps. Come on.
I don't have much change.
Thank you so much.
I love Japan.
The kids here are young, so they don't have a lot of money to donate. But Morrison thinks they're contributing by buying anime.
When you come to events like this, okay, everything you see in here is all from Japan.
Almost 7,000 miles away, but immediate for kids like Miles Adams. The skinny 19-year-old in a flowing black cloak and spiky white wig is dressed as a character from a Japanese video game. In a funny way, he says, Japan feels like home.
I mean, it's where I've gotten most of my enjoyment for all my life, the video games, the clothing, the shows and books. So it means a lot to me.
And Japan means a lot to the fans piling into screenings of Japanese shows like Bamboo Blade, or panels on giant robots and mixed martial arts. Jeremy Volk is an anime convention regular. In the wake of Japan's disaster, he says the mood here is mixed, too.
I think it's been hard on everybody. Like, everyone that I've talked to today has been kind of down. And it doesn't seem like your normal upbeat convention.
A lot of people here have friends in Japan.
Yeah, I actually have a couple pen pals out there. One we still haven't heard back from because he lives in Sendai.
Eve Perus, 21, is working in a cavernous room filled with vendors hawking comics, action figures, and vintage kimonos. She's selling Japanese rock CDs with a friend, Angel Brazier. Brazier describes her deep response to the earthquake and tsunami.
Like, versus Katrina, which would be in my own country, I didn't feel it as much as what I feel in Japan.
Brazier and other fans say they've been on Twitter nonstop, communicating about the safety of favorite studios and stars. Some quietly expressed concern about the disaster's impact on anime supply. But Andrew Taylor, a freshman at Drexel University, is clear.
We're not just worried about our anime being cut off. Like, we're actually concerned for the people there.
The convention was filled with fundraising efforts. Most of the vendors had signs saying they'd donate to the Japanese Red Cross. And convention organizers raised about $3,000.
It has pushed me to want to do more, to be more a part of this people.
Ezra Kidjo is 43. To him, manga and anime are not frivolous. Kidjo says the tragedy inspired him to start seriously studying Japanese. He wants his connection to the country now to be more intense, more profound. Netta Ulibi, NPR News.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
Robert, I'm going to be with you in just a second. I'm just trying to finish this game of Angry Birds here. Sorry.
She's Melissa Block.
I am. Yeah. I'm a little distracted right now.
Yeah. Angry Birds.
Angry Birds. An addictive game that I'm playing on my iPhone right now.
A game that has been downloaded 100 million downloads in 15 months?
Angry Birds. It is the most downloaded app ever, Robert. And all you do is you pull a slingshot bag. You catapult this Angry Bird toward a crowd of ornery green pigs. I missed.
And no birds and no pigs were harmed in the making that game. Angry Birds has a new version out. It was created by a small company in Finland that's become the envy of the entertainment business.
And NPR's Elizabeth Blair reports that it's helping 20th Century Fox promote a new animated movie, Rio.
First, why are they angry?
The birds are angry because the pigs steal their eggs.
Peter Mighty Eagle Vesterbacka of Rovio, the makers of Angry Birds.
You know, if somebody would steal your eggs, you would be really angry too.
The physics-based game is addictive. Getting the arc off the catapult just right.
It looks pretty simple, but it's pretty hard to master.
Andrew Stalbo is Senior Vice President of Mobile for 20th Century Fox. He thinks Rovio got everything right with Angry Birds. The degree of difficulty, the fact that it appeals to both kids and adults, the marketing.
They've created these kind of adorable little videos that just spread virally across social networks. And it's something that we really aspire to in terms of the games that we've created here at Fox.
The American behemoth, 20th Century Fox, wanted something from this little company in Finland. So Stalbo and another Fox executive flew to Helsinki. They showed Peter Vesterbacka and the team at Rovio clips of their new movie, Rio, which is also about birds.
Oh, how I wish I was back in my cage with my mirror and my little bell.
Bobo here can't fly.
Don't worry, Blue. It's in your DNA.
Our creative people really, really liked what they saw.
So Rovio agreed to create a new game featuring the Angry Birds and the exotic birds from Rio. Now remember, Angry Birds has been downloaded over 100 million times. Fox would be thrilled to get that audience for Rio. Plus, a lot of those gamers are not moviegoers.
There will be a lot of people that will go and see this that wouldn't normally maybe take their time to go and see a movie. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see.
And what's in it for the Angry Birds?
The marketing power that we could bring to promote the new game on the platforms.
Billboards, posters, a hidden code in a Super Bowl commercial.
From the creators of Ice Age.
Welcome to Rio!
A bird who never learned to fly.
It's hard to say who has more to gain from the Fox-Rovio partnership. The Angry Birds got a free ride in an expensive Super Bowl ad, and Rio might reach a whole new audience when its birds are part of the massively popular video game. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
This is Fresh Air. I'm TV critic David Biancooley. At the start of the fall TV season, HBO gave us the best new series of the year with Boardwalk Empire, which was set in the Prohibition era in Atlantic City, New Jersey. This weekend, HBO launches an ambitious, impressive 5-hour miniseries. And as with Boardwalk Empire, it's set during the Depression. But this one, called Mildred Pierce, is more intimate and, in the end, more emotional and more haunting. It's based on the 1941 novel by James M. Cain, about a middle-class woman trying to survive and feed and nurture her young daughters during very tough times. In 1945, it was one of three Cain stories made into a hit Hollywood movie in his many years, after Double Indemnity, but before The Postman Always Rings Twice. And the title role of Mildred Pierce won Joan Crawford an Oscar. This new HBO version hands the title role to Kate Winslet, who does wonders with it. It's directed by Todd Haynes, who wrote the screenplay adaptation with John Raymond, and they put almost all the drama's weight on the shoulders of their leading lady. Todd Haynes also directed I'm Not There, that brilliant fable of a movie in which different actors and actresses played Bob Dylan at various times in his life. But for Mildred Pierce, it's all about keeping it real. Astoundingly real, down to the period magazines and wallpaper, the food on the diner plates, and the slightly muted photography. Remaking the story of Mildred Pierce at this point in this decade is particularly shrewd. As the drama opens in Glendale, California in 1931, Mildred's marriage to her husband Bert breaks up suddenly. It leaves her in the early years of the Depression with two young daughters, no prospects for work, and no idea how to keep going. It's easy to relate that sort of anxiety to today's financial meltdown. And even easier because Kate Winslet, early on, vanishes completely into the role of Mildred. She's determined to provide for her daughters, but a visit to an employment agency generates nothing except a lecture about how she isn't qualified to do anything but cook or clean. And during hard times, there are plenty of people willing to do that. But when Mildred is asked out for a date by a predatory friend of her soon-to-be ex-husband's, her neighbor has some more practical advice. And the neighbor is played by Melissa Leo, who follows up her Oscar-winning role in The Fighter with another winning performance.
Since when was Wally Bergen interested in you?
I don't think he ever was. But the second he heard Burt was gone, it was almost funny the effect it had on him.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. The morals they give you credit for, you'd be surprised. To him, you were a red-hot mama the second he found out.
Found out what?
Grass widow. Well, from now on, honey, you're fast.
Are you serious?
I am, and they are.
At first, this seems like a very old-fashioned, unenlightened narrative, suggesting that the only way for a woman to survive is to throw herself at a man. And even when the employment agent calls back with an out-of-the-blue job offer, Mildred doesn't see it as suitable.
I was over in Beverly the other night, and I got talking to this lady that's going to marry this director. And he doesn't know it yet, but his house is in for a big shake-up. So, she needs a housekeeper. And on account of all that fine domestic efficiency you were telling me about, I told her about you.
Well, I hardly know what to say. You see, I recently came across a similar job as a waitress, and I...
And you turned it down?
Well, I couldn't. I just can't go home and face my children knowing their mother works all day at taking tips and wearing a uniform and mopping up crumbs.
But you can face them just fine when there's nothing left to eat.
That will never be the case, Mrs. Turner.
It's no accident that in these early scenes, Mildred doesn't talk much. It takes a while for her to find her voice, and even longer to find a direction. Especially since the thought of taking that waitress job makes her sick. Literally sick. But she takes it anyway, and uses her skill at baking pies to bring in some extra money from the diner and to start her on her way. But this is James M. Cain, not some fairy tale. So not every turn in the story is a triumph, and not every man she meets is a prince. As actors, however, the men in Mildred's life, led by Guy Pearce as a dashing young playboy, are charming. And it's not until the fourth hour that Mildred's eldest daughter grows up enough to be played by Evan Rachel Wood, the vampire queen from True Blood. But she's worth the wait. Her defiant disdain of her mother's work ethic is one of the key elements in this miniseries, and ultimately provides its biggest payoff. And it's a different payoff than the one in the 1945 movie, because this version is more faithful to the original novel. I really, really enjoyed this miniseries, especially because it's perfect as a miniseries. The sheer length of the drama and the journey Mildred has to take makes her struggles more potent, more painful, and more real. Mildred Pierce is a masterpiece of modern film noir, or if you prefer, TV noir. And it's anchored by a performance by Kate Winslet that is unlikely to be beaten at next year's Emmys. Oh, and one last thing. HBO's Mildred Pierce will make you hungrier for pie than any television offering since Twin Peaks and Pushing Daisies. Select your TV snacks accordingly.